Hello again, friends. It's a rainy day here, so the light's a little odd in the room, but glad to see you again. Let's start with Daimaku Sancho, so we're all on the same page, so to speak. Namu Amyoho Amyo Horenge Kyo Namu. Amyo Thank you so much for being here. Chapter 27. We're almost through with the Lotus Sutra proper, but we have still the closing sutra to follow up on that. And whether you know me well enough by now or not, you probably already assumed I'll have a few more things to say. Chapter 27, The Previous Life of King Wonderfully Adorned. What's this one called? Here. We're doing a lot of really encouragement of Samantabhadra. Another encouragement for females to practice. Is that the right? Yeah. It's interesting the different translations, right? Also, what's included and what isn't. They do vary a bit. Not in that central portion, which I still maintain is the bulk of the teaching of the sutra, is on the Bodhisattva way. Not that these latter chapters are not, but they're not the main meal. They're more of the spices and little tastes which affect or can enhance the main meal greatly. So I don't mean to diminish them. They have their place. They're different. Case in point, a lot of what we're dealing with now is what Nichiren Buddhists would probably call shoju or shakabuku or kozenrufu. There's a lot of terms in Japanese, as well as other languages, but I'm talking specifically here around Nichiren, about propagation, about telling others, how do I do it? And I've talked to you about this before. But it's also not only about propagation to others. And this is a little piece of insight I think is also something to think about as we're reading these, because it's very easy as we're reading these chapters, to start becoming, gosh, it's like the human tendency in our samsaric condition specifically, we tend to push everything outward. We want everything to be a duality. Everything is me and other, right? So there's this tendency, no matter how much we read and how much I've talked about the different chapters in this sutra being self-reflective, being about how our mental conditioning is, how we condition our mental condition, how we influence our karma, our energy, our inertia, how we navigate our lives by containing, exploring, obliterating that energy, that karmic inertia that wants us to just go this way, when in fact we need to modify and even appease some of that inertia so that we come to a sort of mental rest. Okay, now that effort, the very crux of Buddhist teachings, the very crux of being a Buddhist, of practicing Buddhism, has such a profound effort that many times can seem insurmountable. So difficult can it seem at times to stay the course that it's like burning our own flesh up, burning up our own bodies. What kind of commitment, what kind of determination would it take to do that? Not that you should burn your body, Medicine King. Not that you should burn your arms off or cut out your eyes. That's not the point. The point is the mental exercise, the effort, the determination it would take to do something of that sort is the kind of determination it takes at times to stay the course and maintain a strong mind and conviction that this delusional samsaric condition can be pushed aside, that you can see above it, that your Buddha nature is real, extant, and experienceable. At other times, it's a simple matter of gently grasping it. At times, it's as simple as finding some quiet alone time or with someone special, but let's say alone time. I've done this. I've sat next to a little babbling stream, just sat there and listened to the bubbling noises of the water getting louder in my head, pushing away everything else in my mind. Just being there in the moment, almost smelling the cool water, even if it's hot outside. Feeling the light breezes, even though it's not windy. And then maybe putting my fingers in the water or the edge of the water in the silt and looking closely at the silt. And then maybe this moment that washes through you, just the simplicity of that. It's just so huge and focused and small and yet completely pervasive. And in those moments, you can know Buddha. You can feel Buddha. You can experience your Buddha mind. And then at work, when your boss is unreasonable and the middle manager is trying to screw you, and you can hear whispers around you and you're not sure if they're about you, around you, or something else, and everything seems uncertain, and you feel fires burning in your gut, and you either want to explode in anger or just stew in your own hell, so full of desires to do you don't even know what, just that insatiable feeling of angst. And in those moments, remembering that beauty, that solemn, singular, eternal moment becomes so difficult, right? So remember that in simile, in parables, in examples, a lot of that kind of descriptive experience is in these stories as well. So in chapter 27, as opposed to the Medicine King, which is about burning your body alive with determination, which, as Shakyamuni points out, all you have to do is embrace even a single word of this sutra, this teaching. Embrace it, read it, recite it. Get others to read it and recite it. Copy it. Why is copy? It almost stands out in there. Well, they didn't have Xerox machines back then. Hell, 99% of the population didn't even know how to read or write. So to copy something meant you really had to study it. You had to study what it looked like, what written form was. Most of the copying was done in Shakyamuni's day by oral tradition. You copied it by memorizing it and reciting it. That's a different kind of copying, isn't it? That's what they were doing. They didn't really set down to transcribe the teachings until well after Shakyamuni's extinction. His 50 some odd years of teaching were all done orally. They were sermons. And the way you learned them was by repeating them. Repeating them over and over again, all day long. And that's how you taught it to others. Thus I have heard. Right? So copying, part of the process, part of learning, part of inculcating. And why would you learn and inculcate at that level? If not only for yourself to receive awakening, instruction, but in order to parrot that instruction, to tell others. It's always been about the Bodhisattva way. Right? If it was just about teaching you for your sake and then moving on, I would write it down, say, here, read this, see you later. But if I say, hey, learn what I'm telling you and recite it, memorize it, copy it, keep it in your mind, say it over and over again. Well, that's a good device for you to learn something, certainly, but it has built into it oration. And that speaks to others, literally. So this is a powerful tool. Why do I bring this up now? Because in chapter 27, we're going to see how, rather than lighting oneself on fire for everybody to go, wow, that's intense, what it's really about is an internal struggle to maintain dedication, determination, and conviction in one's own practice. Now we're going to see how in those subtle moments, examples, relationships, just communication can move others to take up, copy, read, recite, and embrace something new without being clubbed over the head. So that's chapter 27. At that time, thus I have heard, the Buddha addressed the great assembly. My eyes are getting worse. Long ago, in a previous age, innumerable, unlimited, and inconceivable, countless eons ago, there was a Buddha named Wisdom, blessed by the king of constellations, called the Sound of Thunder in the clouds, Tathagata. There's a mouthful of a name. He was an Arhat, a Buddha, whose land was adorned with light and whose aeon was named Seen with Joy. Under the Dharma of that Buddha, there was a king named Wonderfully Adorned. The wife of that king was called Pure Virtue, and there were two sons, one named Pure Treasury, the other named Pure Eyes. Again, this naming convention, you know. Those two sons had great divine powers, merit, virtue, and wisdom. For a long time, they had followed the way of bodhisattva practice. See, it's not new. That is, the practice of generosity, the practice of morality, the practice of patience, the practice of perseverance, the practice of meditation, the practice of wisdom, the practice of skillful means, kindness, compassion, joy, impartiality, and the 37 kinds of aids to the way. All of these they thoroughly mastered. They had also attained the bodhisattva concentrations, the pure concentration, the sun, stars, and constellations concentration, the pure light concentration, the pure color concentration, the pure illumination concentration, the long adornment concentration, and the concentration of the treasury of great dignity and virtue. They had thoroughly mastered their concentrations. This is the Shoju way. This is the sitting by the stream way. This is the consistency, calm way. Right? No fire here. Then that Buddha, wanting to guide King wonderfully adorned and having compassion for the living, taught this Myoho Renge Kyo. This Dharma Flower Sutra, he taught it then. Meanwhile, the two sons, pure treasury and pure eyes, went to their mother and, putting their 10 fingers and palms together, said to her, "We beg you, mother, to go and visit wisdom blessed by the king of constellations called the Sound of Thunder in the Clouds, Buddha. We also would wait on, associate with, make offerings to, and worship him." Why? Because this Buddha is teaching the Myoho Renge Kyo among the multitude of human and heavenly beings, and we ought to hear and receive it. The mother replied to her son, "Your father has conviction in a non-Buddhist way, deeply attached to Brahman teaching. You should go and talk to your father so that he may participate and go with you." Because back then you didn't do things unless your father approved, right? This was the way of filial respect. Pure treasury and pure eyes, putting their 10 fingers and palms together, said to their mother, "We are sons of the Dharma King, yet we were born in this home of wrong views." The mother said to her sons, "You should be concerned about your father and show him some divine marvels, so that when he sees them, his mind will become clear and he will permit us to go to the Buddha." Because they were concerned about their father, the two sons leapt up into the air to the height of 7 tala trees and performed many kinds of divine marvels, walking, standing, sitting, and lying down in the air, emitting water from the upper part of their bodies and fire from the lower, emitting water from the lower and fire from the upper, enlarging themselves until they filled the sky and then becoming small again, or making themselves small and then appearing large again, vanishing from the air and suddenly appearing on the ground, going into the ground as though they were water, walking on water as though they were the ground, on the ground, by showing various divine marvels like this. They led their father, the king, to cleanse his mind for understanding. When their father saw his sons with such divine powers, which he had never experienced before, he was overjoyed, with palms together, greeted his sons, saying, "Who is your teacher? Whose disciples are you?" The two sons replied, "Great king, wisdom blessed by the king of constellations, called the Sound of Thunder in the Clouds, Buddha, who is now under the Bodhi tree of the 7 precious materials, seated on the Dharma seat among the human and heavenly beings of the worlds, is teaching the Myoho Renge Kyo everywhere. He is our teacher. We are his disciples." The father then said to his sons, "Now I too would like to go see your teacher. Let us go together." With this, the two sons descended from the air, went to their mother, and with palms together said to her, Our father, the king, has now come to believe and understand it, and has been able to set his mind on supreme awakening. We have done the Buddha's work for our father's sake. Please, mother, allow us to leave home and pursue the way under the Buddha. Then the two sons, wanting to restate their intentions, spoke to their mother in verse. Please, mother, permit us to leave home and become mendicants. Meeting a Buddha is very difficult, and we would be followers of this Buddha. Rare as the blossoms of the Adambara are even harder is it to meet a Buddha, and it is hard to get rid of difficulties. Please allow us to leave home. Then the mother said, I will allow you to leave home. Why? Because it is difficult to meet a Buddha. With this, the two sons said to their parents, Good father and mother, we beg you in time to go to wisdom blessed by the king of constellations called the sound of thunder in the clouds, Buddha. Approach him and make offerings to him. Why? Because a Buddha is a very difficult thing, as an Adambara flower or as a one-eyed tortoise meeting the hole in a floating log. But we, being richly blessed from the past, have been born at a time when we could encounter the Buddha Dharma. Therefore, father and mother, you should listen to us and allow us to leave home. Why? Because Buddhas are difficult to meet, and it is difficult to find the right time as well. At that time, all 84,000 women in the rear of the palace, king wonderfully adorned, became capable of receiving and embracing this Myoho Renge Kyo. Pure eyes Bodhisattva had long ago mastered the Myoho Renge Kyo concentration, and pure treasury Bodhisattva had mastered the concentration of freedom from evil levels of existence innumerable hundreds of thousands of billions of eons ago. This was because he wanted to lead all the living away from the evil levels of existence. The wife of that king had attained the Buddha's assembly concentration and knew the secret resources of Buddhas. Her two sons, using their powers of skillful means, skillfully transformed their father, enabling him to have conviction in and to understand and to love and delight in the Buddha Dharma. Do you see how this is just a story about how to teach others? There's no clubbing over the head here. This was just a gentle example. Right? They didn't even use words. Their behaviors were enough to attract their father's attention and their mother's compassion. And they could not deny that there was something of value here. This is how they spread the teaching. This is how they shared the Dharma. So this is another chapter. This is another story illustrating that you shouldn't feel so. Who's harder to convince about something than your parents? And yet, in another way, because they're your parents, you expect them to have more confidence. But isn't that the battle with parents all the time? To prove to them that you're deserving of their confidence? And isn't mostly the battle within ourselves because we don't believe they have the confidence that they do? It's a very complex thing with parents, right? So the story is about sons and parents and women. Women figure heavily into this. By watching the son's example, don't miss that. Yes, they were trying to convince their father so that their mother would allow them to proceed. But in the midst of all that, 80,000 women who had even been part of the conversation, they were watching. And it changed their lives. That's easy to miss. This is how important the Bodhisattva practice is. Because it's not just the one person that you try to fumble around and explain Buddhism to and introduce them to concepts. It's innumerable people. Remember, there was an example in a previous chapter about the 50th down. The person you tell will share in some way with some other who will grasp something of that. One of those people that they share with will grasp something of that, and that will touch somebody else. And 50 people removed, that 50th person's benefits and merits and advantages of having heard about this Myoho Rengekyo will be just as amazing and profound as the first. This isn't the power of magic. I'd do you a disservice if I let you think that. What it is the power of a truth. Right? When you stick your hand in a fire and you get burned, how many people do you think that you have to demonstrate that to? How many people do you think I need to have a blistered up hand before word gets out pretty convincingly that people shouldn't stick their hands in fire? Because it's a truth. Truths don't bend, people do. Make sense? Then King wonderfully adorned accompanies his ministers and followers. Queen Pure Virtue, accompanied by the ladies and followers from the rear palace, and the king's two sons, accompanied by 42,000 people, set out together to visit the Buddha. Arriving, they prostrated themselves, circled around the Buddha three times, and then they withdrew to one side. This is the format, right? Then that Buddha taught the Dharma for the sake of the king, demonstrating and teaching it to him, enriching him and bringing him joy. The king was joyous with delight. Then King wonderfully adorned and his queen removed necklaces of pearls worth hundreds of thousands from their necks and tossed them above the Buddha. In the sky, they were transformed into four-column jeweled platform. On the platform was a large jeweled couch with hundreds of billions of heavenly coverings. Sitting cross-legged on them was the Buddha, emitting a great light. Then King wonderfully adorned thought to himself, "The Buddha's body is rare, dignified, and extraordinary, in form most subtle and wonderful." Most subtle and wonderful. The Buddha's body. We're not talking about this kind of body now. We're talking about the Buddha's body, the mental state, the sitting next to the stream, the expansive, subtle, exquisite sensation, the Buddha. Then King wonderfully adorned thought to himself, "The Buddha's body is rare, dignified, and extraordinary, in form most subtle and wonderful." That's the only form it has. Then, wisdom blessed by the king of constellations called Sound of Thunder in the clouds, Buddha, said to the four groups, "Do you see this king wonderfully adorned standing before me with his palms together? This king, having been a monk under my Dharma and diligently studying and putting into practice the Dharma that helps one along the Buddha way, will become a Buddha named Saltree King. His land will be named Great Light, and his aeon named Great High King. This Buddha Saltree King will have countless bodhisattvas and countless sravakas. His land will be level and smooth, Such will be his blessings. Time to plug in. All right. Such will be his blessings. The king immediately turned over his land to his younger brother, and together with his queen and the two sons and all their following, gave up his home and practiced the way under the Dharma of that Buddha. Having left his home for 84,000 years, that number comes up a lot, doesn't it? The king was always dutiful and diligent in practicing the wonderful Dharma Flower Sutra, the Myoho Renge Kyo, and after these years had passed, he attained the concentration of being adorned with all the pure blessings. Then he rose in the air to a height of 7 tall trees and said to the Buddha, "World-honored one, these two sons of mine have already done the work of the Buddha by their divine transformations, changing my wrong views, enabling me to dwell at peace in the Buddha Dharma, and allowing me to see the world-honored one. These two sons are my good friends. They wanted to awaken the roots of goodness from my previous lives, bringing abundant benefits to me. That is why they were born into my family." Then wisdom, blessed by the king of constellations, called the sound of thunder in the clouds Buddha, said to King Wonderfully Adorned, "That's right, that's right. It is just as you say. By planting roots of goodness, any good son or good daughter will have good friends in life after life, and these will in life after life, and these good friends will be able to do the Buddha's work, demonstrating and teaching the Dharma, enriching and bringing joy to others, enabling them to enter supreme awakening. Great King, you should understand that a good friend is the great cause and condition by which one is transformed, led to see the Buddha, and aroused to seek supreme awakening. Great King, do you see these two sons? These two sons have already made offerings to as many Buddhas as 65 hundreds of billions of myriads of sands of Ganges, associating with and revering them. In the presence of those Buddhas, they have received and embraced the Myoho Renge Kyo. Having compassion for living beings with wrong views and enabling them to live with right views." King Wonderfully Adorned then came down from the air and said to the Buddha, "World-honored one, a Tathagata is extremely rare. Because of his blessings and wisdom, the knob on the top of his head shines brilliantly. His eyes are long, wide, and deep blue. The tuft of hair between his eyebrows is as white as a bright moon. His teeth are white, even, close together, and always shining. His lips are red and as beautiful as bimba fruit." All these compliments to appearance. When King Wonderfully Adorned had praised that Buddha's countless hundreds of thousands of billions of blessings in this way, putting his palms together before the Tathagata in complete devotion, he spoke to the Buddha once again, saying, "World-honored one, this is unprecedented. The Dharma of the Tathagata is completely full of inconceivable and wonderful blessings. The practice of his teachings and precepts will bring peace and comfort and good feelings. From this day forward, I will no longer follow my own whims, nor will I allow myself wrong views, pride, or arrogance, anger, or any other evil states." Having spoken these words, he bowed to the Buddha and left. The Buddha said to the great assembly, "What do you think? Is this King Wonderfully Adorned unknown to you? He is the present Bodhisattva Flower Virtue. The queen, pure virtue, is the Bodhisattva, marks of shining adornment, who is now in the presence of the Buddha. Out of mercy, for King Wonderfully Adorned and his people, she was born among them. The two sons are the present Medicine King Bodhisattva and Superior Medicine Bodhisattva." I guess he learned his lesson. You follow that? These bodhisattvas, Medicine King and Superior Medicine, have already attained great blessings, and under countless hundreds of thousands of billions of Buddhas, have planted roots of virtue and attained good blessings beyond conception. If there is anyone who is acquainted with the names of these two bodhisattvas, human and heavenly beings in all the world should worship them. When the Buddha taught this chapter, the previous life of King Wonderfully Adorned, 84,000 people separated themselves from uncleanliness and acquired pure Dhamma eyes for seeing all things. So, that's quite a fable. And he didn't miss the opportunity to rub it in again about how it's so unnecessary to torture oneself with such effort when all it takes is acceptance. Not only did Medicine King Bodhisattva learn that lesson from chapter, was it 23? But now he has the opportunity to teach somebody else in an effortless way. Right? He just demonstrated his concentrations, his will, his strength of conviction. He and his brother, Superior Medicine Bodhisattva, both behaved in ways that inspired their father. And that inspiration is all it took to send this father and mother into the correct views, the correct practice of Myoho Renge Kyo, so that they too could attain this subtle, beautiful Buddha state. No chopping off of limbs, no burning, no excessive, right? The only reason, if there's a reason, for tremendous effort is our own demons, our own monkeys, our own obstacles. And if we understand that we're the ones who manifest those obstacles, it's laughable. We just need to be aware. We just need to awaken when we can take that muck, mental muck, and just put it beneath our boots. And we can change it into firm ground instead of muck. It becomes the firm ground we stand on. And it's comical. Because it's so easy. Subtle, but enormous in its pervasive joy and beauty. The Buddha mind, the Buddha awareness. It's always there. The only thing that obfuscates it is our monkey mind. That doesn't mean that it's not sometimes very difficult to overcome. Just understand that that's what's happening. Continuously remind yourself, God, my monkeys are so loud right now. As much as we have to do that with ourselves, think about how others are all struggling with the same thing, and many of them, if not most, don't even know that this is happening. How do we help them know? That's the tricky part. But as long as we keep trying for ourselves within the context of a society, not alone in a monastery, but within the context of being around others, our struggle becomes meaningful because it instructs them. We're not perfect. We're going to have slips and falls. That's what allows them a way in. Right? They may say, oh, see, you're not so perfect. Yes, you're right. Thank you. I'm still working on it. And they will walk away thinking, Well, I kind of slammed him hard. Maybe I shouldn't have done that, but he sure is determined. She sure seems to be convinced. The next time they see you, you still doing that thing? You seem brighter. You still doing that thing? Oh yeah, oh yeah, I'm learning more every day. I still have occasional slips. But overall, I just seem my life is getting better and better. Really? Well, maybe there's something to this thing. We should talk about it sometime. Tell me about it. I mean, I don't know that I want to do it or anything. But, you know, it seems to be working for you. Oh yeah, it's grand. Just let me know anytime. I'd love to talk to you about it. Or just, you know, come over and chat with me sometimes just to see. It's a kick. You should try it. Yeah, I don't know if I'm ready to do that or not, but yeah, maybe. That's how it starts. It's very simple. Our monkeys, man, they're clever little buggers. And they resist. Oh, they can resist. Right? That's what this is about. That's what the Lotus Sutra is about. Yes, there are moments when it's like burning fire to get through. It doesn't have to be, but there it is. That's our samsara condition. Accept it, walk through the fire, come out the other side. It'll get better. Be determined, have conviction. The more you determine, the more you have conviction, the less the fires will rise. Others will witness this. Even if you don't intend for them to, they will witness it. People will start popping up out of all over the place asking you questions. You're like, I don't even know you. That's a gift for you. So, wow, thank you for asking. Be humble. I don't have all the answers. Actually, you do. You just don't know yet. I'll help any way I can. Promise. That's Bodhisattva practice. It's so amazing. I so encourage you to do this. I can't even tell you. You can't know the benefits of doing Bodhisattva practice without doing it. We've all done charitable things, and you know it changes the things in you that you didn't even know were there to change. You don't even understand it, but you feel it, you know it. It changes the way you see the entire world, just one little act. Imagine living your life day to day that way. That's what this practice does for us. It gives you something to do constantly. It never ends. How many times can you help somebody change a tire? You can't put on a cape and go down the highway every day looking for people to help, you know, with their cars, start along the side of the road. You could, but your opportunities to help people would be very far between. And it might even get frustrating and difficult. Well, this practice provides you 24/7 opportunity constantly. All right, I'm going to close chapter 27 now. Really appreciate you hanging on and hitching a ride. I hope I'm helping you to understand how these sutra work, how the sermons work, specifically the Lotus Sutra and its meanings. Give you tools to help you and to help others. Dhammo Kusancho. Namu Myoho Renge Kyo. Namu Myoho Renge Kyo. Namu Myoho Renge Kyo. Let's go savor the day. Yes, sweetie. My little dog's hungry. So I gotta go. Bye-bye.